You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Till you wake up on your own, I wonder where you are. Live with all your faults. I wanna wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so why don't you smile?
Yeah. All right, on a Thursday, Mike McNamara with you, joined by Tim Lynch from Texas. What's going on, Timmy?
Not much, Mac. How you doing?
I'm all right. Now they got a hold of you two guys. And Jeff Kenny joins me from Southern California. Jeff, how are you?
Very good. Just got dental surgery again.
Nice. Congratulations on that deal.
Thank you.
Yeah. Always a good deal. All right. First of all, anything exciting to report in the last week of your life?
For me, yes. I, this weekend, saw a movie called, you're not going to believe this, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then Bigfoot. And it changed my life.
Really?
It changed my life. Yeah, and I'm just going to tell you, I don't want to waste your time, but you should see it. It's not as dumb as you think. Matter of fact, it's not dumb at all. It's a Sam Elliott movie.
Oh, Sam Elliott.
Worth watching.
Yeah. Normally does good stuff. Timmy, anything new and exciting in your life?
Not a damn thing. I other than I started watching the Mexican Narcos, and I'm all caught up in season two of that. It's awesome. But that's pretty much it down here in the tropical Texas.
Wow. You guys are pretty dull. I'll tell you what, at least you're consistent.
Just incidentally, I'll be there.
At least you're consistent, though.
I'll be with Timmy. I'll be there with him in 2 days, so.
That's like how
sweating our balls off.
How exciting is that? What's the weather like in Texas, Tim?
Good.
Sunny, 80 degrees, low humidity. It's absolutely beautiful right now.
Yeah, Jeff's going at the perfect time of the year, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous right now.
How humid does it get where you live, Tim? I mean,
it fluctuates. It depends what the dominant pattern, whether the dominant weather is coming off the plains of America or out of Mexico. And so it can go from being sort of dry, which it is right now, which is still like 20-30%. It's not like Arizona, to kind of swampy right around the time a hurricane might be in the area. It gets mighty humid then. But generally, it's low humidity.
Because Lori looked up on the weather what the temperature was going to be today, and it said they expect to be 90 degrees, and she almost fainted right here because I'm taking her with me. So, so that's good to know. It's only 80.
The whirling dervish that is known as Lori Kenny, right? Two thirds of the earth is covered by water. The other third by Lori Kenny.
Wow. She gets down here after May. It gets above triple digits, and it doesn't come down. I mean, that's it until October.
Yeah, nobody wants that. All right, we might as well go to Kuwait.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody wants that either. So
no, they don't.
So the all right. let's see. I mean, I went to Colorado. It was kind of cold there, and came back, and very beautiful though. Our air officer from the 1st Marine Division in 2004, Gary Kling, Static, call sign Static. He's stayed with he and his family there, so that's kind of cool. And then I've never been to Orlando. I go to Orlando tomorrow. Any tips on Orlando for me?
Well, I've been to Orlando quite frequently. I don't know what part you're going to, but International Drive, any place along International Drive, stay the hell away from it. That's you don't want to be there
International
after 9 o'clock at night. Yeah.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah, the International and Martin Luther King Avenue, right down in there. That's not where you want to be. But that's pretty far away from anything that's convention center-ish. I imagine you'll be in downtown.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yeah, you know what's beautiful.
Martin Luther King's always a red zone.
Easy with that.
No,
that's what Dave Chappelle said.
You know, no,
it's okay.
I know it's okay if Dave Chappelle. You might want to quote him when you say it, though. We don't need.
I'm air quoting it.
Yeah, we don't. Hey, we don't need you mimicking Dave Chappelle with no footnotes. Okay, that's the last. Right. That is the last thing the planet needs. All right.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Exactly.
My last one.
That's your, you know, famous quotes that go down in American courtrooms. Oh, I didn't really say that. I was quoting Rick James. Okay, white boy, you might want to footnote that son of a bitch next time.
Right.
Or Snoop Dogg. I was quoting Snoop Dogg. Yeah, well, you might want to yell that. Yeah. I'm
Marcus Tullius Cicero of modern culture.
Exactly. I have not spent very much time in Florida in my life. Hardly any.
Well, what's a cool part of the town there is where the old Navy Recruit Training Center used to be, where I went to recruit train at. That place has developed into some unbelievably expensive, really nice property, and it's smack downtown.
Really? You know, yeah. They've done that with the Naval Training Center in San Diego.
I bet they did.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty prime property in Point Loma. And, you know, shops and, it's all just gigantic buildings. And once they got the asbestos out of them, then they tried to do something good with them. But
it seems like no matter how, because all those communities were raising Cain about losing their military bases, every one of those. But every time they closed one down, Newport, Rhode Island's the same way. That property turned into a bajillion dollar. Right on Narragansett Bay waterfront property, for crying out loud. It was beautiful. And all that stuff ends up, it seems to me, doing a lot better for the local cities than the Navy base ever did.
Well, what do I know? I don't recall there being a hue and outcry when they left Point Loma. Those people were pretty confident they could turn that into something.
Yeah, like the Presidio. They weren't too upset about that.
Yeah, go ahead. Right? Don't let the door hit you on the way out. But a lot of communities, you know, it's a huge deal. You know, the whole BRAC thing is, in rural America, you know, where a lot of Air Force bases are, you know, you start taking out the economic impact of your local Air Force base, and you're talking about a huge impact too. When I was up in North Dakota, they had a flood, right? They had a flood and fire in the city. At the same time. And then simultaneous to that, there had been, I want to say in the second round of BRAC, they took one of the bomber commands out of the Grand Forks Air Force Base. So they lost.
Wow.
Yeah. They lost a bomber wing, and they dealt with the flood all in a period of maybe 15 years. It was a huge hit to this, you know, a city of, you know, the metropolitan statistical area, about 80,000 people. And, but you know what? You know, communities reinvent themselves, and it's a pretty amazing thing. And a little bit of state help, a little bit of federal help in terms of renaissance zones and seed money and things like that. And lo and behold, the American entrepreneur finds a way.
You know that the Marine Military Academy in Harlingen is located on a former Air Force base, and the local lore is that Lyndon Baines Johnson specifically closed that base because he never carried the Rio Grande Valley in as a state during the state elections. And so as soon as he had the ability to, he just closed the base down, and it was a gigantic Air Force base. And that's where the airport and that Marine Military Academy, and they've got a Rio Grande Valley University of Texas campus all in that prime real estate that was – it's still surrounded by farm fields. It's way the hell out there.
You know,
that fits in with the lore of LBJ to a T, man.
Well, any politician, right? D. Trump is doing it, right? Hey, this is politics, man. You take a swing and you miss, you're going to pay. Right? I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, and everybody's like, what did McRaven say? When a civil servant can't blah, blah, blah. Come on, man. We're talking politics, okay? Yeah. When you want to take a swing, right, at center stage, and you don't get it right, you're going to pay.
I think that's called big boy rules. I know we understand them. There's no big question right in my mind about that.
Right. I got an email that I should share with you two chumps about why the Felix de Weldon carving is in at the Marine Military Academy down there. Yeah. And then I looked at the site. Let me see if they fix it yet. They haven't. So a guy, what's his name? His name's McIntyre. Scott McIntyre. He's an alum.
Yeah.
And so he listens, and he said he enjoys it. And so he said, hey, I'm an alum. Here's a link to the explanation of why these sculptures down there. Right. And I said, okay. So now I'm looking at the website. That afternoon, when the slopes were clear of enemy resistance, a second larger flag was raised by six Marines. Mike Strank, Harlan Block, Rene Gagnon, Ira Hayes, yeah, right, Harold Schultz, and Franklin Sousley. And so I emailed him back and I said, hey, look, man, I don't want to tell you guys how to run your school or anything like that, but I will tell you how to run your website. I mean, this is a big deal. You got to get the flag raisers right. And he was like, shit, you think somebody would have done that? I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So the picture was later released. Sculptor Dr. Felix W. de Weldon, then on duty with the U.S. Navy, was so moved by the scene that he constructed a scale model within 48 hours, which became the symbol of the 7th and final war bond drive. After the war, Dr. de Weldon felt the inspiring event should be depicted as on a massive scale in our nation's capital. He labored for 9.5 years to prepare a working full-size model from the molding plaster of the survivors of the flag raising, and the others had been killed in the later phases of the battle, who posed for the sculpture, who modeled their faces in clay. All available pictures and physical statistics of the three who had given their lives were collected and then used in the modeling of their faces. Once the statue was completed in plaster, it was carefully disassembled and then trucked to Brooklyn, New York, for casting in bronze. After the three-year casting process, the bronze parts were trucked to Washington, D.C. for erection. I don't know why that word's in there. At Arlington National Cemetery, the plaster... I think that's an inappropriate word for a Marine-like thing. The plaster, certainly in this day and age, the plaster working model was moved to the Weldon summer home and studio in Newport, Rhode Island, for storage. On November 10th, 1954, on the 179th anniversary of the United States Marine Corps, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, an Army doggy, officially dedicated the bronze memorial in Washington, D.C. In October of 1981, Dr. de Weldon gifted the original full-size working model to the Marine Military Academy as an inspiration to our young cadets. Other major factors involved in his site selection included, now pay attention, the fairly constant temperature and humidity in Harlingen were ideal for the preservation of the molding plastic figures. The street facing the memorial was appropriately named Iwo Jima Boulevard by MMA's founder in 1965. MMA is the only place outside of Washington, D.C. where proper honors are rendered with battalion-sized dress blue parades. The Marine placing the flagpole in the ground was a South Texas native, Corporal Harlan H. Block of Velasco, Texas. Blocked gravesite resides directly behind the monument.
Wow.
The monument was dedicated on April 16th, 1982, on the MMA parade ground.
Huh.
There you have it.
There you go. Because I remember in Newport, Rhode Island, it was a tourist bus stop outside the DeWeldon place where you could look through and see that thing inside the garage. I remember that distinctly, and it was that's cool.
So there you have it. The rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So now all they have to do is unscrew their website, and we'll all be good.
And for the record, Chris did mention Colonel Dallin, the president there. He gave the speech. He did mention the mistake in who the proper flag raisers were. So that's another mark for me and Jeff. Another point for me and Jeff to see here and talk about at the end of the week.
Well, I was reading. I don't know what I saw. I don't know if I saw an article yesterday, but I was reading about. You know, it's ironic, if you will, that, you know, the two guys who were supposed to be in the flag raising, right, who had children, right, you know, one's, Gagnon has a son, and then Bradley, you know, wrote the book, right? Both of them essentially, you know, their lives, you know, their whole life, they used to point to that flag raising and say, that's my dad. Right. And then both of them, you know, later in their life, after Bradley writes a book, he gets disenfranchised, right? And then Gagnon, he kind of gloats in it and says, yeah, the son of a bitch got into my dad in that book, that piece of shit book he wrote. And then like 2 years later, not so fast, my friend, right? Your dad's out too. What? Impossible. Oh no, we've like got it down to the gnat's ass this time, we think, right? And and that poor guy, right? I mean, just think, his whole life, that's been a part of his life, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, wasn't in it. What?
You know, people would say, how could you not remember? I could see all the shit they did that day. That's probably the least memorable thing of that day.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. That's a good point, too.
Working party, right? Take this flag up, stick in the ground, and get that other one, the one that means something, and bring it back to me. And don't give that son of a bitch to anybody, or I swear to God, I'll put a bullet in you. Got it, sir. What are we doing? I don't know. Just follow Strank. He knows what we're doing.
Yeah, I like the order for that patrol. The colonel wants this thing to go up there where every son of a bitch on the island can see it. Quote.
You know what? And then you see a picture of Chandler Johnson. And he's got like his baseball cover on with the bill like flipped up, like fucking Gomer Pyle shit, right? And it's just
because he's using binos.
Right. And it's the funny part about World War II, right? You can't find two motherfuckers in the same uniform in any picture. And so like and then you see pictures of these guys. They all have their big bouffant hairstyles. How the Marine Corps comes out of World War II with short hair and uniformity is beyond me. Because that's not how.
Well, I mean, they didn't even have DI covers until after Korea. You know?
It's hilarious. It's like, where did we find our own identity? Like, who made this shit up? Because look at the pictures, man. It's certainly not the way we lived. It's not the way, you know, there was no requirement for uniformity. Nobody's got all the same uniform.
And if you look at guys in the midst of fighting in Iwo Jima compared to people going against the Shuri line in Okinawa, they don't look the same either. And if you know, you read like Manchester and the Okinawa vets, and they said if you picked a Marine up by a crane and shook him, you wouldn't have heard a thing. Everything was quiet because they had to be if they were on those front lines. And although some of that was in Okinawa too, it is. It's amazing how quickly they adapted.
Yeah, but I laughed.
You know,
though.
I got this.
Go ahead, Joe.
You're right though, because I had this book that I got from my uncles. It was just hanging around my grandmother's house. Collier's Illustrated History of World War II. It came out in 1946. That's where I got the original casualties being as far as KIA and Iwo Jima being like 4,600 and something. Because it was right afterwards, you know. And
right, and it's the same
right.
thing.
I mean, they showed Guadalcanal. Guadalcanal, these three brothers, and they're naked from the waist up. They got their Springfields over their shoulders. They all got beards. Like, I'm talking beards like ZZ Top beards almost, man. You know? And they're all brothers, and they're all in Guadalcanal. And it's like, I'm like, holy shit. And you're right. And then you go, Marines on Terra. They look like a whole nother service.
No, but you know, I'll tell you what, I think it's hilarious because you look at him and nobody's got like, and then, I mean, Chandler Johnson, he's a battalion commander. He's got the Gomer Pyle cover going, right? And you're looking like, what the fuck? And, but, you know, the whole propaganda of it, you know, Nimitz's, you know, no, Nimitz, Halsey's behavior, right? You know, we've been talking about
very erratic.
Yeah, Battle of Lady Gulf, right?
Yeah, no, some good quotes though, man.
Exactly. Got a good nickname, and they protected his ass, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing to see here, boys. Bull holes.
Then he sails through a typhoon and sinks, what, three or four ships?
Yeah.
They were leaving guys for pulling bullshit like that, but not him.
Came mutiny. Well, you know, he said this, and this is a quote, just like Snoop Dogg and just like – this is a quote from Halsey, not Jeff Kenney. He said, the Japs are losing their grip even with their tails. And when you sailed out of the harbor at Guadalcanal at the end of the battle, he had like ever-growing signs, like five or six of them that said, kill Japs, until there's a huge sign just as you cleared the harbor saying, kill Japs. And that was him who did it.
Yeah. I mean, so look, if you're a quote machine, you'll ultimately be protected by the American media because, I mean, who wants to know? Hey, who wants to hear the bad news anyway? You know, yeah. I got it. The lagoon at Tarawa, it sucked. Okay. What do you want us to do about it? Tell the truth. Tell the truth.
What are you trying to do? Make us feel bad?
Exactly. Dolly down.
Sorry. What are you trying to do?
Make you feel bad? No, but I do think it's funny. In terms of, I do think it's funny relative to the uniformity thing in the Marine Corps, because it's like such a big deal. And then you look at pictures of the way we lived, and it's just like, no, it sucks, right? Well,
so how do you square the stuff that Van Riper was that we've talked about with Van Riper with that experience? That's one of the things.
It's like discipline and comradeship and pride in each other causes absurd humor. I mean, look at that thing with General Barrow and the guys from Lima 3-8 who made that Christmas card in Beirut where he's showing it around the Capitol. He shows it to President Reagan. It says, sir, to your Marines from Beirut, and it has the Marines putting up the cedar tree of Lebanon in the same pose as the flag raising in Iwo Jima. And President Reagan looks at it, his eyes full of tears. He goes, this is the best Christmas present I've ever had. And he puts it in his breast pocket. And Barrow's like, it's like, he goes back to headquarters of the Marine Corps, find those guys. I want another goddamn card. And the Marines thought they're in trouble because they're always in trouble, right? What the fuck did we do now? We ain't saying who did it. Right. So finally they got, I think the FMO from Sixth Fleet at the time, I don't know who it was. He says, look, gents, it ain't you're in trouble. The president stole the commandant's Christmas card.
What the
hell? Okay. All right. They made him, I think that's in a Marine Museum somewhere, that picture. That
really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so.
That goes back to General Zinni. Okay. I'm going to take the blame for all of it so we can have a rational discussion, okay? Nobody's going to get in trouble. Like when he's talking about what? The moon pie truck and a 155, right? And a 6x towing a 155 on a trail in Korea, right? And he said, look, clearly it was my fault to communicate intent. All right. Now we can have a rational discussion about it. So, anyhow. So, no, I just, I thought that was funny. Let's talk about the peace process in Afghanistan. I use Grant Newsham's term cautiously pessimistic to describe the institutional position relative to that. Timmy, any new thoughts on, I guess we laid the wood to, you know, we got all those aircraft and we got all that ordnance. Now we're not hitting ISIS, hitting Taliban targets. Now we're going to whack the ISIS boys. So, yeah, one man's loss is another man's gain. So congratulations to them. But any thoughts on anything going on over there?
Yeah, I think this is the end. That this marks that we're probably going to end up inking this peace deal. the Taliban released a masterstroke of information operations. You could call it propaganda, but for what they were trying to accomplish, it was an unbelievably good letter written by, allegedly, Sirajuddin Haqqani, who is of the Mirin Shah Shura. Remember, Jeff and I have said the Quetta Shura is the guys in charge. Having Sirajuddin Haqqani, who's a literate man, but I don't think he wrote this particular missive, release it indicates some unity of effort. And I think that's going to be enough to get Khalilzad to sign on our behalf, because Khalilzad wants to get the hell out of there, seeing how he's got a lot to do with why the situation is so screwy to begin with. Right. So I think this is it. And if you look at the armed conflict, the location and event data project, the stats for Afghanistan have plummeted in the last month, both Taliban and U.S. initiated attacks. I mean, plummeted. So who knows? We'll have to see how this works out.
Jeff, thoughts?
And granted, the weather is shitty right now there, especially up in the
Explain why that's significant.
Because these guys are mostly foot mobile, the way they bring stuff in. It comes from Pakistan. It comes through those passes. You know, the foot passes, you know, near Ganjigal, up in Nuristan and stuff. And so, and also, so their ability to mount significant operations is impeded by the weather. Now, it's not so bad like down in Helmand and stuff, but I think there the focus is mainly on finance and the whole thing through the ebb and flow of the drug trade. And so consequently, there's not that much, you know, down there, although there is attacks up in the central, as you guys know, in northern province. Down south, not so much. And it is Pakistan, like Tim says. You know, I was talking to
Hold on. You were explaining why the weather was significant, and now we got the taxes. But there's a thing called the fighting season, right? And so everybody knows.
That's what it is.
And we're getting
the weather's
to
bad.
It. Yeah, we're getting to it. But in fact, the weather's actually warmed up. In Helmand, you know, it was in the 60s. Today and it was it's been in the 40s here the last couple weeks, so it's getting warm.
Hey guys, if I could point out, Jeff is absolutely correct about the fighting always dies down in the winter, particularly along the Eastern Corridor, which is mostly where all our activity was. But in the last few years, it hasn't died down that much during the winter, and so. I think that the drop that you're seeing is bigger than you would normally expect. And the fighting season doesn't start till the poppy comes in, bro. So even in the Helmand, it didn't start heating up till about end of April when they've harvested all the poppy. Because the fighters are out there lancing those. I mean, that's people make – they got a gigantic
migrant. Well, but again,
migrant.
That's those are the local guys, right? That's little T. But big T migrates in the spring. Right. They, you know, they lick their wounds in the winter, and then they get the big T sends their guys not February would be too early, but certainly, you know, March and April that you see more activity as big T sends their guys back to work.
Traditionally, that's true. But if big T makes a deal with the Afghan government, they can get visas and fly to Dubai and enjoy the big T money. I'm telling you, that this is it. This is going to be the end.
So
and
this
I,
is it.
I don't know how much fighting we're going
this
to see.
This is from this is the Free Range International prediction. This is it.
This is. Hey, I've been saying, I think, and rather consistently for 8 years, this is how it was going to end. The only thing that didn't happen, which I was afraid would happen, was the loss of an American unit, some kind of surrounding elimination type thing, which I've been terrified of, because they were vulnerable, particularly down in Lashkargah. There's too much civilian development, which is encroached within that AMP training area that wasn't there 10 years ago. It's now surrounded by warrens of civilians. It's just too easy to isolate those guys and get at them. But that didn't happen.
Okay, so to both of you,
I was going to suggest that. You, Mac.
Exactly.
When you talk, when you do post traumatic winning for the MCAC, as they call it, those reserve advisor officers, Douglas was exactly where Tim just described in Lashkargah and moved around the place. He'd be a good guy to have on the radio about that subject. because okay. he's, you know, he that was his third tour in that area.
Oh, no, sure.
He would know a lot about it. But I just want to just say again, you know, the whole fighting season thing and moving stuff in, you know, just and this is just food for thought, considering the way the president looks at things, what happened with Soleimani and so forth. If he was to say, you know, look, if there's another, like, say this doesn't work and then there's another egregious, you know, American casualty producing operation by these guys and say, look, we're going to bomb Kedah and Peshawar. I mean, we're going to bomb hard. I mean, real hard, harder than ever. I mean, they've never been bombed anyway,
right.
except for like car bombs and stuff. And so, because we think you guys, it's obvious to everybody that all the problems that happened in Afghanistan, I mean, well, not all, but I'd say 80%, you know, have their foundation in Pakistan. And if it's the other 20% is probably Iran nowadays. But I mean, you send this message, like we sent a message about Soleimani. Only thing, it's not just one guy. It's the whole, those places are probably the most evil, you know, anti goodness of places in the world. I don't know if that's a good term, but, and that would send a message. Now, I mean, and again, this is very academic because right. I probably just stepped all over all kind of Geneva Accords and stuff like that. A
couple.
But that would get their attention. That would get their attention away. The true bombing of North Vietnam did in this Christmas time in 1972.
Right. I was listening to,
you know, I mean,
I was listening to interviews with prisoners of the Hanoi Hilton when, and they talked about, they had been, a lot of them had been, you know, sent to a place called the farm. And so they had separated, you right. know, they had separated. And then after the bombing ended, when North Vietnamese said, okay, you know, we're ready to cut a deal. They brought it. They said, we came back through the city and they were like, you've got to be kidding me. They said, Hanoi was destroyed. Hanoi was absolutely yeah. destroyed. And they talked about how stunned they were to see, you know, and they're like, oh, that's why this is going on. We laid the wood to that place. But you know what? I mean, I wish that, you know, I thought that we would do something like that, especially Quetta. I mean, that place has been the heart of darkness for a long time. And we've just, and look, we monitor their communications in and out of there. We know the buildings they go into, right? But we won't touch them. And we've allowed Pakistan, you know, to play that game, much like, you know, and Jeff's alluding to the president, you know, putting Iran on notice. We're no longer, you know, at least in our opinion, what he said was we're no longer going to play the proxy game. We're coming for you.
If I could add one thing, and that is Peshawar.
Back away from your microphone, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, Peshawar is a nice damn place. I say you take Peshawar off the list, put Mironshaw on it, and now we're talking. But Peshawar's nice. It's got way too much civilians and stuff in there to be bombing.
Jeff, he doesn't care so much about that.
Just well, if, I'm like, hey, look.
If you want a personal observation from years of listening, yeah, you're not really going to be too concerned about that.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, you mean like a good libo spot, or I mean, it's got to be like
no. I know. Remember how the Khyber Pass was a couple times,
and it's everything's there.
No, if you know the Afridis, you can go across the way into the Khyber Pass and go to the gin mill and drink that 69 scotch and everything. It's quite the international flavored place. But it's mainly a ton of schools there. So it's flooded with school children during most of the day. I don't know why there's so many large schools there,
but there are
and universities. Yeah.
So you're officially, you believe that this is going to somehow or other last.
Yeah, I think it's going to be enough to get us out. But the question is, what is this counterterrorism operation? Because they said we want to stay and make sure Al Qaeda and ISIS doesn't come back. Well, ISIS is gone, except for in the northern provinces, and the Taliban will take care of them because they're the ones that took care of the other ISIS. If you're trying to separate Al Qaeda from Taliban now, You can't. If you're going to make a peace deal with goddamn Siraj ed-Din Haqqani, who's the worst of the worst, and you're taking him off the table, then how are you going to go whacking other big T Taliban who happen to be with some kind of an Arab guy who's funding a training site? Because they're there. They fund training. There's no doubt about that. But what we're taking the Taliban at their word that they're not going to do international jihad. And quite frankly, if we wanted to spank the place where those guys trained for 9-1-1, I believe that was Hamburg, Germany, not Afghanistan any damn way.
Yeah, we're probably not going to hammer Hamburg. Right, just
yeah, no, we're going to give them a break. We give them a break. I mean, you know, Miss Merkel's
me.
Yeah, I'm just saying that I'm not that worried about international terrorism launching from Afghanistan. I think they understand the consequences of that. But what residual force are we leaving? Because the Taliban wants us all out, everybody out, and I don't think we're going to do that. So, who's staying behind, and what exactly are they doing? Because if they go around doing key leadership engagements and bullshit like that, you're going to get what we saw with this thing in Sherzad District, which makes me very angry to even think about, because it's a waste of I don't see any reason to be doing that kind of Mickey. It's too late. It's too late in the game to be doing that.
It's interesting. You're right. It's like there's nobody that you're going to find over there who's worthy of you know, who's morally worthy of General Allen's kind of like level for, you know, who we deal with. I mean, he basically was waving the Gloria Steinem feminist flag through his whole article that you had there, where he said, you know, all these people, they treat women badly and they don't believe in. I'm like, find somebody there who treats them good. I mean, it's you know, you're crazy. You know, if you're gonna, it's the same type of stupidity that helped fuel the insurgency in Iraq. No Baathists. You know, nobody who worked for the government. Nobody who. I mean, what are you kidding me? That's everybody. And if they have nowhere to go and nowhere to live, we're not going to let them leave. They're going to start killing us. What do they got to lose? And the same shit. With this,
now, you know? Jeff's referring to a piece that it's posted on the Brookings Institute's website, in which the head of Brookings, John Allen, general type, my boss, Timmy's boss. Did you ever work for him, Jeff?
Yeah, now, Jeff was there when Allen was there.
Okay.
The 7 months he was there.
Yeah, and so he wrote a piece, and so Jeff's getting after him for that piece. So
and let me tell you something: when you're in the rural district, those women are not screaming for somebody to come and take the burqa off them. They're not screaming for change. They like just everything to calm down and their kids to go to school. That they'd be happy with that. It's up to the Afghan people. The women in Kabul, they want to be going to university and doing this, doing that. That's fine. Same in Jalalabad, same in Herat, same in Mazar Sharif. Yes. Those are the only places. Exactly. Every place else, you got to let the people have the change that they want. They got cell phones now. The genie is out of the bottle. They know how to get on the internet. Shit will change. But
okay, so
let me ask you this.
It's kind of an interesting question about Afghanistan. So we've talked about when we gaze into the Al-Marine Radio crystal ball that we get out, which is always kind of murky, but we kind of shake it up a little bit and get the Windex out and do the best we can.
It always shows me hungover,
especially late in the day. If we don't catch Jeff early in the morning,
that ain't no good, Jeff.
the crystal ball normally says that, you know, as the Afghan pendulum finds its own place in equilibrium, that the warlords will once again control their cities and the regions around their cities, because that's what they've done, and the Taliban will control the countryside, and that's where it will set. So what about this notion of the federal government of Afghanistan? Does it simply go away without American money and support?
Well, I don't know what it does level. Without the money. It can function through the line ministries as it's doing right now, even in Taliban contested areas. That's your ministries of livestock and farming and education, et cetera. It will still it can function. It's functioning in those areas. But this year, 2020, was the next round of funding, which came with strings attached for anti-corruption measures, which haven't even been remotely close to met. And I have not seen anything in the press about who's funding what. Not a word.
Yeah, I think Timmy's absolutely right. Those guys will find their natural level of where they can exist. They will claim to have authority, and they will keep their jobs by never exercising the authority. They'll be basically like the municipal government of Chicago and Cicero, Illinois in like 1926. They're not running it. The bootleggers are. But they don't want to piss those guys off because they got automatic weapons.
So and they it will go back to a non-existent federal government, which was what they were before.
Yeah, very. It potentially might not because the one thing that was not present in the past was a majority of the population having some degree of education.
And that's huge.
Our efforts have resulted in a significant amount of the population being able to read and write, and a lot of them being computer and tech savvy in those cities I mentioned before. So you've got the genie, you know, the open kimono that Jeff referred to with Iran. That dynamic works in Afghanistan too. So I'm not too terribly sure you're going to be able to go back to the serf versus strong man type relationship. But it's going to be some semblance thereof. It's going to have to mold. It's got to be something the Afghan people can live with. But there's a lot more of them that can read and write, and they've all got cell phones that get on the internet now.
You're right. That's the revenge of the West, particularly America. They will never be able to get away from the fact that penthouse centerfolds exist and pornography exists and Scotch whiskey exists. Once you know those things, how are you going to keep them on the farm once they've been to Gay Paris? It's a version of that.
Make sure you footnote that, so unless people think you made that up this afternoon.
I didn't make
that. Are we talking about something akin to Vietnam in that, you know, the Americans left, but 30 years after they left, 40 years after they left, this whole society was transformed based on the things that happened while the Americans were in the country? Are we going to see something like that?
No question. It's inevitable. The Taliban is not going to come storming back into Kabul. They can't do it. The Kabul government can at least prevent that. So I think we're going to see a place that ultimately our grandchildren may be able to vacation to, because there's some cool places to go see
it's
in that country.
Interesting question for sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I'm not sure anybody's grandkids are.
I think Vietnam. Vietnam ended the way it did in no small part because of domestic issues in America. If those domestic issues in America, i.e. the pending, you know, the ejection of President Nixon from being the president, if that hadn't happened, I think what's going to happen in Afghanistan, or what we're kind of prognosticating, is what would have happened there, that eventually there'd been this like grudging acceptance of the fact that, you know, the opposition exists, and we're just going to have to live with it.
And McNamara's math was really fucked up from the start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oops.
It wouldn't be McNamara's math anymore. It would be Abrams and Kissinger's math.
Right.
You know, it'd be the new real politik, where the shit that happened in Vietnam was linked to what was going on in Red China and in the Soviet Union, because that's how we managed to keep them, you know, to kind of get some kind of parity, was by causing discord between those two, you know, communist monoliths by talking to both of them. And each of them are thinking, the other one's, you know, putting a shiv in their back. I mean, they had to have no shit hot fighting along the Mongolian border and stuff for like the whole 10 years Vietnam was going on. So, you know, it's like, I mean, not constant, but, you know, we took advantage of the antagonism that existed and really exploited it. And then all went to nothing because of Watergate. Whereas there's no Watergate now, you know, not really.
Don't speak. It's still early in the day. Okay. It's still early in the day. You never know.
No.
But let's say there is.
I don't want to say that. That was a fucking joke, you dope.
You should have gave Snoop Dogg credit for that. I should have.
I was joking around, and you were going to hang a left on me and go down that way. I think that's an interesting proposition. The fool's errand, right? That America attempted in Afghanistan, which was to create this federal event, right? Yes. This federal army, the federal government, and, you know, will die of its own. But what will come in its wake is going to be, you know, a generation of Afghans that were changed by the money that we pumped into those places, by the technology that changed that country. And they will not be, and then they will make it what they make it. So, I mean, I think it has very much, you know, an opportunity to be what Vietnam has become, and ultimately saying, yeah, we don't want that.
Mac, I listened to a podcast on Dave Rubin from an Islamic cleric, a moderate reformist. And what the podcast was about was how hard it was for moderate Islamic people to get any kind of a voice in the media. But he was from Iran, was a Shia, forced to flee because of ISIS, not a fan of the Americans or anything like that, was a teenager. And he goes, but you have to understand what the Americans did for my country. The only reason I'm talking to you is because of the Americans. I mean, he was very, very effusive in his praise for the American soldiers, although he's happy they're not around in his country now. And the same is going to be, well, I have Afghan friends in America that have said that. And I think that you'll see more of that in the years to come, depending on how things work out. And we can only hope for the best. They're not bad people. It's a good damn place. Okay. Most of it.
All right. We were going to talk about Iwo Jima part two. Any thoughts? So over the course of last week, a lot of stuff in the news. About the 75th anniversary. Jeff, anything else percolate? I thought, you know, honestly, one of the things that your comment about Ira Hayes and his hands, will you elaborate on that now that you're not going to get emotional?
Cry like a bitch. Because that's what my wife said. Cry like a bitch.
That's the shit that makes us cry, right?
Yes.
An argument with you, Lord, I ain't cried over any of that shit. But I'll tell you I think about Ira Hayes' hands reaching up to that flagpole, fucking makes me cry. I hate you. You're such an asshole. Yeah.
But the thing about that gets you is, well, when I was a kid, a young, not even a teenager yet, is when I saw the movie with Tony Curtis. I saw it that one time, and I remember a couple things about it. Number one, he's on Iwo Jima, and they're fighting in this dark, horrid place. To me, all of World War II is pictured that way. But then the next scene is he's drunk and he's embarrassing them. It's very similar to the Flags of Our Fathers. And then he drowns. But right before he dies, it's that dedication where Felix de Weldon puts his – the statue is presented in 1954, and Ira Hayes is there.
Right.
And he gets drunk that night like he always did, and he ends up sleeping on the bench outside the place. And he's looking up at it, and it shows the poses of the guys, and it shows him. He you can see him – he recognizes himself. And you don't know – by the way, you see it in the movie. The thing just goes up. You know, it's not like a big deal. But then you know, it shows him, and you don't know, and he doesn't really know if he's reaching for it, if he's projecting it forward, or if he's reaching for it like he wants to be part of the country that's denied him, you know, him and his folks, the rights that most other Americans had. So that is a choke up to me. And, I'll tell you, Tony Curtis is well known for being a pretty good actor. However, he's also known for, in King Arthur type movies, he was in saying, "Yonder lies the castle of my father." You know, he never got rid of that Brooklyn accent, and he still had it as Ira Hayes, the Pima Indian from Arizona, you know. But I remember that, and it always stuck with me. And whenever I go see the flag raising, I always think about Ira Hayes. Now, there's another part of that emotion, and that is growing up listening to the two songs by Johnny Cash. Number one, A Boy Named Sue, which is a great coming-of-age song.
An awesome song.
And number two is Ira Hayes, the story of Ira Hayes. And he does a pretty good job of laying it out, you know. And because he's got that wooden voice of his, doesn't you know, have a lot of emotion, it makes emotion by not showing any, you know what I mean? So it's like those two things, you know, you think Ira Hayes, he represents, you know, what's best about the guys who come in the Marine Corps. A guy who comes in the Marine Corps, he doesn't just come in for I don't give a shit what he says. 90% of them, they don't come in for the education. They don't come in to like learn how to be. They don't even come in to learn how to be tough. They actually think if I go through this machine called the Marine Corps, that when I come out of the other end of it, I'll be a better person. And for that, you got to give them a ticket to heaven, just to have that. I'll be better. I'll be braver. I'll be fairer. You know, it's like the United States version of knighthood. You know, for everybody who can get down to Paris Island or San Diego or Quantico, everybody, if you can get through that and hang on, you carry that badge the rest of your life. And that's what that whole thing represents to me, you know?
And just talking about the movie is called The Outsider with Tony Curtis in it. Ira Hayes died when he was 32 years old.
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, yeah, it's a horrible story. The movie comes out in 1961, and I need to watch that again. I gotta find it and watch it. All right, Timmy, any other thoughts on Iwo Jima?
Yeah, I through my new What's Finger News aggregator, I came across an article that said what young people don't know about history can change the world. I thought that was interesting. It was about Iwo Jima and the fact that virtually you ask any high school, college-age kid in America today, they have no idea what you're talking about. And just like Jeff and you, Mike, we were raised with this story. There wasn't a kid in my school who didn't know what Iwo Jima was because there's only three TV channels. And whenever they played Sands of Iwo Jima, like the whole country watched the damn thing. What else are you going to do? So nowadays, when the popular media seems to all the movies are about zombie killers and superheroes, the stories that you can articulate or tell just in that one battle alone are of unbelievable courage and sacrifice and valor, much more so than any stupid goddamn superhero or zombie killing thing that's ever been filmed. It's disappointing to me that so much of our history remains such a mystery to our youth, because it's a stirring testament to us. Like Jeff said last week, the Japanese said, we're going to take it bare knuckles. We're going to get it on. And we said, we can do that. We're going to get it on. And the strength that we demonstrated to overcome that, the adaptability of individual Marines who just teamed together. Here's a flamethrower. Here's a guy with some demo. Let's go. We're going to take this thing out. It's right in front of us, 10 feet away. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's hard to imagine when you're standing there, and I'm just disappointed that our popular culture doesn't do a better job of venerating the sacrifice of our forefathers, because it's beyond imagination. It just is.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Have you guys seen
– yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, there's a new initiative there's a bunch of new initiatives that most of them I don't agree with. But one of them is all infantry guys in the Marine Corps are now going to be 25 or 26 years old.
Oh,
and I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, yeah, they're saying they want to be.
We've transitioned to the commandant's tweeting here, right?
The only thing I want to say about that is those guys in Iwo Jima, most of them weren't older than 22. And that initiative would have – we wouldn't have had Audie Murphy. He wasn't even 21 when he did that rampage through Sicily, Italy, and southern France, you know, and got every medal you can get. We would have never had Ray Smith in Way City. We never would have had, Sergeant who got the Medal of Honor there. They were all underneath the age of 25.
Gonzalez.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's like selling our youth short. I think if we don't keep feeding them the shit that we think they want, like this, you know, these so boring to watch a superhero thing with the Big Bang. When you got real stuff that happened, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm so bored. But as soon as something, you know, otherworldly happens, unless it's really well done and there's a good story attached to it, I'm like bored right away. You know, I know this couldn't happen, so it doesn't interest
me. Oh, you mean superhero shit?
Yeah,
right. I can't sit through one of those movies. It's boring as shit.
I don't watch that stuff.
The only one that was good was Christopher Reeve and Gene Hackman. You know what I mean? Because at least they were funny, you know?
But I didn't see that. To me, that stuff's – like, if I want to see something funny, like, I'll watch Snoop Dogg. I mean, the rest of that stuff, come on. I mean, I'll go to a movie with my kids. Like, I'm asleep in 5 minutes.
Right? Yes.
They're like, Dad.
I know, I hear you.
I know. They're like, Dad, you're snoring. I'm like, all right. Hey, I'm trying to sleep. Would you leave me alone? Okay. I'm going to give you some topics, and you can each pick one, and we'll finish talking about one of your topics. Grant, in 1864, Grant enters Meridian. In 1890, all February events. In 1898, the USS Maine explodes in Havana Harbor. In 1862, Grant enters Fort Donelson. Let's see. In 1988, Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel William Higgins was captured by the Hezbollah in Lebanon. 1964, U.S. cuts off all military assistance to allies in response to trading with Cuba. In 1942, Franklin Roosevelt signs an order authorizing the removal of any and all people from military areas. In 1864, the Battle of Olestree is fought. Never heard of it. I think it was a Civil War battle in Florida that involved like eight guys coming out of a bar in Florida. let's see. 2018, North Carolina Bridge is dedicated to Captain Richard Etheridge. In 1942, U.S. automobile manufacturers halt production due to the need for metals, rubber, and oil. We're not producing cars anymore, boys and girls. In 1955, the first council meeting for SATO, S-E-A-T-O, is held. And then in 1991, the Gulf War ground offensive begins. Jeff, pick one.
Holy cow. Well, let's talk about that, about the cars being stopped being made in 42. Because my father used to tell me about that all the time. And so I'm watching TV with my dad. And the Godfather comes on.
Oh my God!
And it's the part of the Godfather where they're gonna shoot the guy Paulie, and they shoot him out by the swamps. But when they're getting ready to go, he's cleaning his car up, and my dad said, "Yeah, those are wood bumpers on that car." I go, "What?" He says, "Yeah, those are wood bumpers on those cars because of what you just said, that thing." So I'm like thinking, "Man, my dad knows everything." Then I'm watching years later. Years later, I'm watching they had another Godfather where you remember where they put in all the scenes that they cut out and that shows. And this guy Clemenza, the fat guy who owns the car, goes, "Stupid Detroit, send this car with wooden bumpers."
Right.
I'm waiting for next year when they start coming out with steel bumper or, you know, aluminum bumpers again.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy cow. Dad was right.
Listen to this. On February 22nd, 1942. U.S. automobile manufacturers halted all production due to the need for metals, rubber, and oil for the U.S. For the U.S. war efforts, right? Officials from the automobile industry quickly created the Automotive Council for War Production to protect their own interests. Automobile production resumed in October of 1945, three and a half years later.
Yes,
nice.
And he was bitching because he hadn't got his new bumpers yet sent to him.
Yeah, created the big time salvage industry and was really good for being a mechanic. All right, Timmy, any one of those you want to talk about?
Let's talk about Colonel Higgins.
Yes,
that was and I don't remember a lot of it other than his wife was active duty and
February 17th, 1988. Marine Lieutenant Colonel William Higgins was driving alone on a highway after meeting with local groups when he was stopped and dragged from his car by Hezbollah terrorists. Higgins was working in the region on the United Nations peacekeeping mission at the time. He had taken command of the UN Observer Group in Lebanon just a month and a half earlier. He was a Hezbollah hostage for a year and a half, during which he was interrogated and tortured. On August 1st, 1989, Higgins captures released a grainy video recording to Western news outlets of what appeared to be Higgins' body, which had been hanged. The group said they killed Higgins in retaliation for an Israeli abduction of a Shiite preacher. Higgins' remains were returned to the United States and interred in Quantico National Military Cemetery in December of 1991.
Yeah, I remember that. I was there, as a matter of fact. So his wife was also on active duty, and so when he was pinched, not only was your were you taking an American military officer, you were taking a certified UN observer, a blue helmet. So that was a slight not only against America but against the entire UN. The second one now by Hezbollah that in the preceding couple of years, because they had pinched the CIA station chief in 83.
Yeah, Buckley.
So 5 years prior, Buckley. They have done the same thing, kept him alive for a year, tortured him to death. And for that, they got what? What did we do? What ultimately did we do about that? Or shut we the or Jersey the UN up. Or anybody?
Yeah. I think nothing. We should go.
Not one damn
his
thing.
His birthday, we should hit. We should hit another one of those son of a bitches.
That's another is. I'm just comparing and contrasting to what we're seeing right now, which, as you know, I've effusively praised the commander in chief. Could be a coincidence. I don't know. But the way things are going right now, as compared to what they were in the 80s when we were on active duty, it's phenomenal. I just hope the run of luck continues, although I don't know that it's going to survive the coronavirus. We'll have to see.
I saw an interesting little tidbit. The minister in Iran that denied that there was the coronavirus was present in Iran. He's now been identified as having it.
This disease we don't have, I have.
Exactly. He's a coronavirus denier. Not anymore. Yes. Not anymore. Yeah. You can't make this shit up, right?
Uh-uh. No.
It's the Chinese, man. Right now, as we stand here, if we sit here talking, right now, there's 50,000 Chinamen across China eating a raw bat somewhere. Eating a bat, uncooked.
Well, let me. I sent Grant an article that I saw, Grant Newsham, an article that I saw from the New York Post by a guy who's a China guy who hates China, and said that it's a New York Post story that said, "Don't buy China's stories that the virus may have been leaked to the only class 4 virus from the only class 4 that China has that happens to be in Wuhan. Yeah. And what the article says is, hey, look, what probably happened was nothing deliberate, but a lab tech probably sold a monkey or an animal on the black market that he believed was safe to do it, and that animal wound up in somebody's stomach with this virus.
Yeah.
And so I said to Grant, I said, what do you think of this? And here's what he said. Actually, to me, it sounds like a very plausible explanation. And if I had to choose one, this would be it. Was it a bioweapon that malfunctioned? Doubt that. But a science experiment that leaked? Maybe so. Industrial hygiene / safety in China is about the same as in Homer Simpson's nuclear plant. That is common.
Yes.
That is common knowledge. I have always sought countries where people who are not manifestly insane, who routinely crap in the street, ought not to have nukes or bioweapons.
That's true.
Oh man,
and they are an ingenious people, but they are so different from us. Like Lori used to work at this airline, and her coworker was this Chinese woman from China who spoke English as a second language, not too good, but she was an expert on Chinese culture. Lori's always swearing, right? So Lori says, "What do you guys do for a swear?"
Give me
an example of a swear, and she tells her this word, gaucho or something like that. Wombata. And Lori goes, "What does that mean?" And she puts her hand over her mouth. She goes, "It means turtle." Oh. I'm like, "What's so bad about a turtle? I mean, fuck, that's what we call the leader of the Senate, you know, McConnell, you know, that's his nickname." No, it's very bad.
Oh, really?
Turtle. Oh. Yeah. So it's like, because they eat the fucking turtle while it's still walking, probably. You know?
No shit.
Well, boys, here's the thing, though. As amusing as this is, I don't think we're that far away from some serious problems, because all of our antibiotics, all the precursor chemicals are made in China.
Yeah,
even the India pharmaceutical industry depends on China. And you don't have to go far on the internet to find articles from doctors saying that they're being told, IC drips and opiates and stuff like that are going to be hard to come by very quickly. At the same time, they're saying that the availability of dope on the streets, heroin and whatnot, is dried up, and they're seeing addicts coming in full blown withdrawal because they can't find it no matter how expensive. I don't know that any of this is true, but I do know the precursor part is concerning, and there's only so many damn test kits you're going to be able to manufacture to find it. And it appears that on this, it doesn't leave a resistance. Once you have it and you get rid of it, if you're reinfected, that's when it becomes really a problem for your system. If all this is true, we're kind of like screwed. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, I don't think it's true though. I think it's too. I think it's too early. But you know what? Let me tell you, where there's an economic opportunity, you will see companies tripping over themselves to exploit that and make some money. So I don't. I think you know China
and politicians.
Does. Yeah,
and politicians.
China's loss is our gain, and then maybe you'll see some legislation that you know that like we used to have back in the day that outlawed certain businesses and capabilities from leaving the United States because it was in the
that
was in the national interest that we have it. All right, boys, I'm done. I gotta go.
All right, Matt.
Thank you very much for the visit. Always enjoy it.
No, Thank you. Pleasure, brother. I enjoy this too. See you on Friday, Jeffro. I can't wait.
Betcha. I'll see you then, man. Yeah.
All right, girls. Have fun. See you later.
See you, man.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
There you go. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.